I'm joined by two members of the Black Oak Ensemble, which is a string trio out of Chicago. I have David Cunliffe, you're the cellist, right?
Correct, yeah.
Yeah, and Aurelian Fort Petrozzoli, and you are the violist, is that right?
Yep.
Okay, I got that right, that's good. We're here to talk about a new recording of yours, I believe the debut recording of the ensemble.
That's correct.
Silenced Voices is the name of it. This is a really important album, not just for the fact that the music on it is so interesting and beautiful and stimulating, but also for the fact of the stories behind the composers you've included on here, 20th century Jewish composers, most of whom perished during the Holocaust. And there must be an interesting story behind how this project came to be. I wonder if you might start by telling that story.
Sure. Well, it happened about 2.5 years ago. Desiree, the violinist, who's not here today with us, and I were on a Ravinia trip, and we happened to be in Budapest, and we always like to make it our mission to go into old music stores and bookstores and look for music that we might not have heard of. And we just pulled out these three string trios, all bizarrely beginning with the letter K, or the composer's names beginning with K, and brought it home. And we played through them with Aurelian, and we thought, hey, this is really good music. I'm just amazed, you know, we just haven't heard of these composers before. And gradually, it sort of dawned on us that there was a theme linking all of them. Hmm. And Aurelian, why don't you take over the story there?
Yeah, my mother is a history teacher in France, and her area of expertise is the Holocaust and the Second World War. And as a child, I remember her every year putting all of her students in a bus and doing the fantastic tour that is the Krakow and Warsaw and Terezin, Prague, and finally Auschwitz as part of her education on the matter. And the composers that David was referring to are Kuti, Kressa, and Klein. Those were the first string trios that we got. And after reading them, because of their birth date and their the date of their death in order 45, 44, and 45, I talked to her about it. And at the time, she was reading a book called Music at Terezin, and two of those composers were prominently named in that book, which Klein and Kressa. Kressa, because he was the organizer with Klein of a lot of the creative and musical output that was done during his time in Terezin. And little by little, the project expanded because we got in touch with someone who was related to the Ravinia Festival, who lives in LA and works for the Orel Foundation. His name is Bob Elias. And little by little, he was like, well, have you tried this composer? Have you tried this composer? And we got in touch with another foundation called the Forbidden Music Regained, and we're lucky enough to be put in touch with some of the victims' families, and who said, well, you know, I have this manuscript of a string trio. Would you like to see it? And that's how we ended up with an album of music that were seldom performed, but also that was completely new to a listener. I mean, The Freed is a world premiere, and before we played it for the first time, it had never been played.
You mentioned Terezin, and we should probably just say what that was for listeners who may not know.
Sure. Terezin is a fortress outside of Prague, about 50 minutes outside of Prague, which first became a prison for diplomats when the Second World War started, and the diplomats of different countries did not escape in time. They put them there. At the time, it was not a concentration camp, it was a prison. And before that, it was actually always a prison. The person who killed the Franz Ferdinand, which started the First World War, was interred there as well. And the town itself, the town of Terezin, became a ghetto for the Jews, for mostly Czech Jews. And it's a whole town. We were lucky enough to go this summer and perform this music in Terezin, where it was written. And it slowly became an extermination camp or a complete gateway towards Auschwitz and other places of assassination of the Jewish people. And at first, it was a ghetto very similar to the Warsaw ghetto. And like I said, people like Rasa and Victor Ullmann, Pavel Haus, all these people were still trying to create, and the Nazis were doing their very best to make it so that they wouldn't be able to. But the head of the camp, who was a very vicious man, saw the possibilities to make the camp of Terezin propaganda tool and show to the Red Cross and to other organizations who were wondering what was happening there that in fact nothing bad was happening. And so they put fake shops and fake theaters, and there's a very famous Red Cross video you can find on YouTube of the Red Cross walking through the streets of Terezin, and it looks like a normal town. And so they encouraged at some point the creation of some of those pieces. And Krasa was most famous for a Yiddish opera for children that he wrote called Brundibar. And you see that very opera being performed on that Red Cross video. Of course, it was not this was all a masquerade, and Jewish people and other intellectuals were treated awfully and assassinated summarily for no reason whatsoever. And so that was the gist of what Terezin was. And at the time, there were so many intellectuals, like I mentioned, Victor Ullmann, Pavel Haas, and Hans Krasa and Gideon Klein. In the case of Krasa, he was already quite a famous composer. He had been performed by conductors such as George Schell and the Boston Symphony. And he was already a very well-known entity in the music world in Europe. Klein, a little bit less so, but also a very bright star that was starting to shine at the time. So that's more or less the story of the camp. It's a very, it's a very twisted and sick period of our history, but it's a very interesting very interesting what musicians and artists managed to do in such conditions.
Well, yeah, and it conjures up the whole world in your mind of these composers. You mentioned specifically Krasa and Gideon Klein, two of the composers on your recording, that were operating under these horrible, horrible circumstances, yet turning out music at the highest level and able to do that with what little resources that they had at hand.
Yeah, but if you look at other people in the recording, some of the music Kattenberg and Hermann wrote in squalor, trying to hide from the Nazis in the Netherlands, and Kuti actually is the one who's the most striking to me, because after he was deported to Auschwitz, and Auschwitz was this, as far from humanity as possible, he was able, by putting paper together and finding ways to write, he was able to write a solo violin piece, sonata, that he then smuggled through a guard for his pregnant wife, and she got it. And this is incredible to me, because I can't imagine living in those conditions, and much less creating in those conditions, and that's just mind-boggling.
Now, you mentioned you found three of these scores in the bookstore in Budapest, and the others came from various sources. How many of these came to you as manuscripts?
I would say three of them. The Kattenberg and the Fried and, yeah.
So Herman was somewhat of a manuscript, but
I think that was published, actually. But yeah, so certainly, and they were very difficult to read. We had to, and interestingly, I think it was a Kattenberg, right, that had lots of doodles over the music, which was sort of fascinating to see, you know, a composer, you know, thought process. And there's a doodle on one of his manuscripts of a German soldier giving Hitler a Nazi salute. So it's it really brings it home very vividly.
Well, you've also got a world premiere recording on here of an early work by Geza Fried, who was a composer that actually survived the war. Can you talk about his work?
Sure. I mean, this was a very sort of last-minute addition, but when we got the score and read through it, we just fell in love with it. And yeah, it was a miracle he survived the war. He's a Hungarian composer, or at least was born in a part of what was then Hungary. I think it's now Romania, and then fled to the Netherlands. But it's a great piece, and it's full of humor. Yeah, he survived and you know, became quite a prominent composer. I think he felt towards the end of his career that his musical language was being passed by other composers, and he sort of retired. He was a complete genius by the sounds of things. Not an easy man, apparently, but he spoke seven languages and he loved literature as well as sports. And died, I think, in 1985.
And a student of both Bartok and Kodály, as I understand it.
And there's a connection between quite a few of the composers here. A lot of the music on our album has that sort of Hungarian feel to it. A lot of the music has this rhythmic motif, in fact, of a sort of a ta-ta kind of rhythm that pervades all the music, which I think is part of the Hungarian language. I think that a lot of Hungarian words, you know, have the emphasis on the first syllable.
Even though there's that thread running through many of the works here, I'm struck by how different these styles of these composers are and how absolutely technically masterful they wrote for your instruments, because it's not easy to write for a string trio.
Exactly. I mean, I think, a string trio is one of the hardest formats to write for. It's not like a string quartet, which, you know, just divides up into soprano, alto, tenor, bass. It is a notoriously difficult medium to write for. And we don't quite know why there were so many string trios. I mean, maybe it's just too easy to hypothesize that that's the only instruments that they had. Messiaen's Quartet for the End of Time is a very good example of him just finding the instruments that were just available to him at the time. But I think you've got to think that because there were so many that, you know, maybe there weren't so many violinists around, or they started to write something and then suddenly someone gets deported to Auschwitz and, you know, you're back to square one. But it's the musical styles are very different. Some of the composers are perhaps at a more mature point in their composing life, but even within pieces, there are different styles going on. And I think that that's interesting. You very often find that with young composers. They're trying different things out, they obviously are influenced by great composers at the time, most notably Bartok and Kadai, I would say, with this group of composers, but they're trying new things out all the time.
Well, it's fascinating to listen to the music and, you know, at times heartbreaking to listen to it in the context of knowing what happened to these composers. This is a recording called Silenced Voices, comes from Sidi Records, a wonderful collection here, wonderful performance, I have to add. The playing is just fantastically captured in the production.
Well, thank you so
thank
much.
You.
Yeah, I've been talking with cellist David Cunliffe and violist Aurélien Fort-Petrozzoli, two members of the Black Oak Ensemble. Is there a website where we can go and maybe explore more about this project?
Well, our website is www.blackoakensemble.com, and on the website you can find a page called Silence Voices, which has a little bit of the backstory to the album. You can also go to Forbidden Music Regained, which is a website as well that unearths a lot of these composers' music. There is the Aurel Foundation, a very important foundation in LA, started by James Conlon. And Sedi Records, who is our label, with our producer Jim Ginsberg, and of course you can buy the album on Sedi Records, iTunes, or Amazon.com.
Wonderful. Well, David and Aurélien, thank you so much for sharing your music with us today here on FM 91.
Thank you for having us.
Great. Thanks for having us.